The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
America, bonjour, hi, Canada, Hugh Hewitt. It's the 10th day of August in the year of our Lord 2022. I'm at Studio North, Winterfell. And I hate to be the first to tell you, but there's a new virus in China. And I've been reading the Guardian story and the Bloomberg story on it this morning. It's called LAY-V virus, which is short for Lanya Hennepa virus. First detected in the northeastern provinces of the Chinese communist-governed state, there are there are dozens of cases. No report yet on human-to-human transmission, no report yet on lethality, but why would we believe anything a Chinese Communist Party tells us anyway? I don't. You don't. All I know is if it's big enough to make it to The Guardian and Bloomberg. Nearly three dozen people in China have been sickened by a newly identified virus from the same family as the deadly Nipah and Hendra viruses, though there is no evidence the pathogen can be transmitted from person to person. LAY-V virus. Okay, just mark down the date, August 10th. Hugh Hewitt told me about it. That's what I did. You heard about coronavirus from me back when we called it the Wuhan virus. First, you heard it condemned first, warned about here first. And so I keep my eye on this stuff, especially when it's in China, because none of the information is any good. They're lying. You would think that the Chinese communists would begin to wonder about Xi Jinping. He's spending all this money shaking his fist at and rattling China's saber towards Taiwan. And he's got rampant coronavirus. He's got an economy on the brink. It's going to fall apart in China pretty soon. And he can't control his crazy scientists. And I do believe that they've done so many weird gain-of-function research, some of it with our help, that we're in big trouble. I also think, do you really want to be in the United States with Tony Fauci leading another virus response? Here it is, you know, 3 years later, 2.5 years later, and Dr. Fauci is still there. You want Joe Biden to be giving those press conferences? Joe Biden, who can't get his jacket on? Oh, well. When we come back from break, I'll tell you about the economic news of the day. There's only one story. It's the search raid warrant on Mar-a-Lago. Washington Post: Trump claims political persecution after FBI search of Mar-a-Lago. Let's play cut number one.
Everything this corrupt establishment is doing to me is all about preserving their power and control over the American people. They want to damage you in any form. But they really want to damage me so I can no longer go back to work for you. And I don't think that's going to happen.
All right, so I have a front Washington Post lead editorial today in the paper, which a few people still leave. Like the old people in Washington still read it. They don't read it online, but it's on the top of the landing page over at Washington Post. An editorial that President Trump should release the warrant. He should just release the warrant and then demand that Merrick Garland release the underlying affidavit, which is sealed. I talked to a former federal prosecutor and district court judge yesterday. The former president definitely has the warrant. Four corners of the warrant will tell what they were after, and it will tell you what they were seeking to enforce. And I'm coming to the conclusion, given the silence and the mummy's tomb at Justice, that they really were basing this entirely on the Presidential Records Act and classified information laws, which just makes me think, what a put-up job. In any event, the editorial I write concludes, hey, Trump ought to release the warrant. That's the headline. You'll find it over at WashingtonPost.com. It concludes, even Republicans who might oppose another presidential run by Trump are aware that this search could compel him to run sooner and harder than he might otherwise have planned. Another attempted takedown of the most investigated president in history could leave the former president stronger politically with his base than before and personally angry enough to run again, even if he'd been toying not to do so. You know, Lindsey Graham said to me yesterday, just be careful what you wish for. This guy, he's been the most blessed person in the world in terms of his enemies. Be careful for what you wish for indeed, I conclude. If the investigation misses and sputters out in another fruitless witch hunt in the endless movie of Get Trump, the Trump haters will have missed again. And 45 will start planning on being 47. My Washington Post editorial today. And I just think it's on the mark. And that's why there are thousands of angry comments like buzzing bees around it. And it went up last night at 6:30 p.m. And it's already got thousands of comments because people can't believe anyone objects to this. Here's the Wall Street Journal editorial. Well, first, let me play a little audio because there's a lot of great audio on this yesterday. Let's start with Senator Rick Scott on Fox Business with Dagan McDowell. Cut number 8.
Well, first off, it makes you mad. I mean, this is their rate. This is unprecedented. A former president, potential opponent to Biden in 24, his house gets raided. We know the Biden administration targets their opponents. Merrick Garland's targets Democrat opponents. Here's what needs to happen today. Separately, Merrick Garland, Christopher Wray, Joe Biden need to do press conference, take all questions, explain why they're doing what they're doing, what each of them knew when. This should scare every American until we get answers. You should have unbelievable concern. I got more phone calls.
Let's go over to Ted Cruz, cut number 13.
That's exactly right. What we've got to do is win control of the House and Senate so that we have the authority to engage in oversight. You know, it was interesting. The director of the FBI was there for one round of questions. At the end of the round of questions, we're supposed to have a second round. He said, no, I got a plane to catch. I'm sorry, I got to go. He didn't want another round of questions. As Chuck Grassley observed, wait a second, you've got your own plane. The FBI has a private jet just for you, so your plane to catch is you just don't want to have any more investigation. We need serious oversight. We need accountability. The people who have been political and partisan need to be fired, and if they've broken
Ted
the law,
Cruz
they
is absolutely right. Let's hear Marco Rubio say the same thing. Cut number 10.
You know, an FBI raid looking for supposed classified documents is a ridiculous alibi. Unlike anyone else in the federal government, no president can be guilty of illegally handling classified information because a president has complete and final authority to decide whether something's classified or not. The truth is, this raid wasn't about documents. This raid was about trying to disqualify a likely future election opponent, about trying to intimidate Republicans who oppose the left, and about creating a distraction from Biden's failures and the radicalism of the Democratic Party that he leads.
Rubio's right. Let's go listen to Lindsey Graham on with Jesse Waters. Cut 27.
What we need is the predicate for the warrant because we're talking 90 days before a midterm election, right? 90 days. We're talking about raiding the home of the former president of the United States, the most likely nominee of anybody on the planet to be running in 2024. Is it plausible the FBI would open up an investigation of Donald Trump without merit? Hell yeah, they've done it before. So on air,
Lindsey said that on our show, and so he said again. Let's go to Senator Tim Scott of South Carolina. He'll be on the show with me a little bit later today on the CBS Early Show. Cut number 7.
We've had the FBI before, the Judiciary Committee, just in the last 2 weeks, trying to figure out why they do what they do. And there's been lots of questions before this raid about whether or not the FBI is doing their job apolitical. And we don't know the answer to that question yet. This
you
is
have
probably
doubts
gonna,
about the FBI.
This is going to raise more questions, in my opinion. We need to let this play out and see exactly what happens, but we should all have been.
So you know what the Democrats said? Paul Begal is my friend. I go out, the Washington Speaker's Bureau sends Paul and I out to do a bunch of events together. I always enjoy being with him. He's always wrong, but he's always funny. But yesterday he said this on CNN, cut number 23.
The theory is, we must not offend the Trump base. We must not trigger. You know what triggers the Trump base? Everything. Sunrise, sunset, Sesame Street for real, Sesame Street, Dr. Seuss. Everything pisses off.
Hey, stop for that. What did Paul do? He diverted from the topic of raiding a potential candidate. When I come back, I'll play a Christopher Wray. This has really, you know, I was so glad to be on Fox News when this happened. It said blockbuster, never happened before. It's unprecedented. I urge you to go and read the Wall Street Journal editorial. I'll get to that later. I want you to call me 1-800-520-1234. 1-800-520-1234. There's other news. I'll make sure that you're up to speed with any breaking news, as I always do. But the story of the day remains the story of Monday night when I was on over at Special Report. It remains the story I covered all day yesterday and the story I'm covering all day today. A former president of the United States home residence was rifled through. And by the way, the 87,000 IRS agents that the Senate just voted to hire, the Democrats just voted to hire, they can do the same thing to you using IRS authority. So that's what you got. Vote. Do not vote for one Democrat anywhere. Vote for Dr. Oz in Pennsylvania. Vote for J.D. Vance in Ohio. Vote for Joe O'Dea in Colorado, Adam Laxalt in Nevada, and of course, Herschel Walker in Georgia. Do not vote for one Democrat. I'll be right back. I want to remind you that our sponsor is andrewandtodd.com. There with Sierra Pacific, they lend you money to refinance your house or buy a home or help your son or daughter become investors in real estate by becoming a non-occupying co-borrower. They help senior citizens with reverse mortgage. They help veterans with no money down mortgages. They help you refinance. So if you need to get money out of your house or you need a whole new house, go to andrewandtodd.com or call them at 888-1172. Welcome back, America. It's Hugh Hewitt. Congressman Mike Gallagher represents Wisconsin's 8th Congressional District and home of the Packers. Or are you prepared to talk about P-cubed, Congressman Gallagher?
Prepared to talk about what, Hugh?
P-cubed.
P-cubed. Oh, gosh. I don't know where this is going. I'm sure it's an elaborate setup for some anti-Packers screed. Go ahead.
The peyote-powered Packers. That's what I want to talk about, the peyote-powered Packers. So what did you make about Aaron Rodgers going to the Amazon and popping peyote to power the Packers?
I'm all for it, Hugh. I'm vehemently against drug use. Let me make that clear. But, you know, if Aaron Rodgers wants to expand the limits of his mind and thereby continue to win MVP awards, you know, on some level, I have to be in favor.
Just remember, P-cubed, you could start a T-shirt. P-cubes unite. The peyote-powered Packers. All right, Congressman, let's talk about something serious. Ron Johnson got renominated last night. You got renominated last night. Any upsets, anything interesting happened in Wisconsin elections last night?
Well, I mean, the governor primary was coming down to the wire. It was close. Tim Michaels prevailed over Rebecca Clefish. Rebecca Clefish was the former lieutenant governor endorsed by former governor Scott Walker. Tim Michaels is a businessman who was endorsed by former President Trump. And so that was a very hard fought primary. Tim Michaels prevailed. And so now we have the task of uniting the party behind Tim Michaels in order to oust Governor Evers, who has been a terrible governor and who's vetoed any number of common sense conservative legislation. So that was really the race everybody was watching. You know, there were a lieutenant governor's race where a state senator from my district, who I know well, prevailed. But other than that, it was mostly the governor's primary that people were focused on.
So, look, you just won an election. You got a congressional reelection coming up. I just posted on Twitter, until Monday night, I thought the fall elections would turn on inflation, recession, crime, the collapse of public education, open border, and our collapse in Afghanistan a year ago. Now add in abuse of power by Team Biden. People are angry, very angry. I also point out the 87,000 new IRS agents, which you will vote against this Friday or Saturday. They can do to every American what the FBI did to former President Trump on Monday night. Am I right about that?
I think you're right. I might put the FBI raid under a broader theme of lack of accountability that really predates what we saw at Mar-a-Lago, right? I think there's a growing sense of unaccountability from the federal government that connects to the fact that nobody seems to have been held accountable for the shameful surrender in Afghanistan. Nobody as yet has been held accountable for signing the letter suggesting that the Hunter Biden laptop was disinformation and thereby abusing in some meaningful sense their post as a former high-level intelligence official. Nobody's been held accountable for the lies and the cover-up about the origins of the coronavirus pandemic and effectively regurgitating Chinese Communist Party propaganda or using American taxpayer dollars to fund dangerous research at Wuhan. Go further back. I mean, the thing that first kind of, I think, altered, if not shattered, part of my epistemological framework about the federal government was when I came into Congress in 2017, I obviously came from a defense and intelligence background. I never would have thought it would have been possible that the highest levels of the FBI could have abused the FISA process, because, of course, my view of the FBI is shaped by buddies I have, who I served with in uniform, who are rank and file FBI agents who are patriots, hardworking, smart guys, and who I think do represent the vast majority of people in the FBI. But clearly there's a problem with leadership. And that, I mean, the way in which the Steele dossier, which was total bogus, was weaponized against the Trump campaign and the Trump administration, that was such a massive breach of trust. I think for a lot of us, that shattered the way we viewed federal law enforcement agencies. And now we sort of see this as connected to that. So I think here in Wisconsin, people are crying out for accountability. And let's face the facts, Hugh. We're going to be in divided government even if there is a red wave come November, right? President Biden's going to veto a lot of conservative legislation. So what can we do rather than just twiddling our thumbs, awaiting the coming of some messianic presidential figure in 2024? Well, we can use the power of the majority. We can use our subpoena power. We can use the power of investigations and good old-fashioned oversight to start holding some of these agencies and individuals accountable and thereby start ourselves on the path to getting the public to trust the FBI, to trust the intelligence community again, for there to be a more productive relationship, because I fear that we strayed off that path. And your average American, certainly here in Northeast Wisconsin, is getting disgusted with all this stuff.
You know, Congressman, you are an intel officer. You're on the Intelligence Committee. You're a Marine. A good friend of mine, Mel Spies, Major General, United States Marine Corps, retired, sent me a note yesterday. Just a factoid. 87,000 IRS agents represent half of the standing United States Marine Corps, more than half of the Marine Corps' strength. They just expanded the IRS by more than half of the Marine Corps. It's kind of a stunning thing to do in the middle of a recession when Americans distrust their federal government. And what you just went through, the litany goes back. The first act is the non-prosecution of Hillary Clinton for the destruction of classified information. No search warrant ever. Terms of her interview, her lawyer was present. All of that caused this original rupture. And the Andrew McCabe, Jim Comey, Peter Strzok FBI was supposed to be reformed by Christopher Wray. I thought Wray was a looted clerk and is a very, I think he's been captured by the agency. I think they run circles around him. And the D.C. agency, I would basically wash everyone out of D.C. and bring in the guys and the gals from the field, because I just don't trust any of them.
100%. I will say this, Hugh. We are on the intelligence community actively working on a aggressive FISA reform effort, which we will try to tackle in the next Congress. Obviously, it's a very difficult thing. There are disagreements within the party on it, but I think we can strike that balance of still giving certain agencies the powers they need to go after bad guys, which you do need, while demanding greater accountability and transparency and respect for due process and things like that. You mentioned the 87,000 IRS agents. If you go on the Army website, you can check me on this. 90,000 is the size of a field army. So we're basically putting in place a field army's worth of IRS agents. And if you think that's innocuous, well, then you've never been audited. I mean, I was rereading Kimberly Strassel actually had a great book about how called The Intimidation Game about a decade ago, which documented the abuses of power here in Wisconsin, where overzealous prosecutors went after conservatives, did raids in the middle of the night, targeting members of the Club for Growth simply because of their politics. And we got a preview of what's happening right now. In addition to Trump being raided at Mar-a-Lago, a colleague of mine, Scott Perry, allegedly had his phone seized by FBI agents. The whole thing stinks, Hugh, and the American people are fed up with it.
If we go back, and again, you're a PhD, so you may not know much about the Declaration of Independence. But in the Declaration of Independence, there's the glorious language we know. But then Jefferson laid out what is an actual indictment of George III. One of the bill of particulars is they have sent out armies of officials to eat up our wealth. And that, I just think 87,000 IRS agents. So your friends who are Democrats, I know you got some friends who are Democrats. I was talking to one last night, my college roommate, longtime Democratic friend, saying, you know, Democrats are bent on self-destruction. Elaine Luria cannot win re-election. having cut the defense budget by inflation alone and having 87,000 IRS agents. She got a vote for that this week. Every Democrat in a tough district is being forced to vote on the IRS Expansion Act. Will any of them defect? Will they? Because they did this for Henry Waxman 10 years ago. They voted for his idiotic climate bill then, and now they're going to vote for a climate bill that helps people in our income bracket buy EVs. Do you think they're actually going to do that 9 weeks before an election?
It's Pelosi seems to be marching them off the cliff right now. And even the New York Democrats and the other Salt State Democrats who drew a line in the sand and said, we're not going to vote.
Would you explain
anything.
That again? We got Steelers fans listening and they're not on peyote. Oh,
that's right.
So you could explain Salt States.
The state and local income tax state and local tax deduction, something we capped or effectively got rid of, depending on what state you live in the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, with the intent of stopping the subsidization of high tax progressive states. Obviously, all the members from high tax progressive states objected to that. And so they said, well, we want to eliminate that provision, go back to the status quo pre-Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. But even the moderate members who drew that line in the sand have now caved to Speaker Pelosi. So with the possible exception of maybe Jared Golden, I think she's going to have all her members vote for this come Friday, which is remarkable. And just the chutzpah of calling it the Inflation Reduction Act is something that astounds me, when this will obviously have an inflationary impact at a time when Americans can't afford inflation. I mean, connect that to the IRS. We're talking a $90 billion slush fund for the IRS in addition to 87,000 new IRS agents. The whole thing is absolutely insane. And I don't know if they recognize that they're headed for an absolute disaster in November. And so they're just trying to get everything done and spend all the money possible, or they honestly believe that the so-called Inflation Reduction Give Everybody a Free Tesla Act is going to improve their electoral prospects in November.
Please go to the conference.
It troubles me more.
Please go to the conference and say, look, we can call it whatever we want. We all got to call it the same thing. I would call it the IRS Expansion Act, but you can call it the Teslas in Every Garage Act if you want. But call it the same thing so that the Senate Republicans did a good job messaging. We got to get that done. Now, I got to ask you about Trump and Mar-a-Lago. I think they basically supercharged his reelection campaign on Monday night. If the president wants to run, and they made him angry as a hornet, although it gave great publicity to Mar-a-Lago, looks beautiful in all the pictures from the helicopters. What do you think? What did that do to the American people? It's never happened in the history of the Republic. 1 minute, Mike.
Yeah, I mean, your stay at Mar-a-Lago promises to come with lots of adventure. yeah, listen, I thought it was interesting that even the 2024 rivals of Trump went out there and condemned the raid and defended the president. And I think it shows how beyond the pale this is. Listen, they better have, I mean, if they don't have the goods here, they've opened a Pandora's box that they are not going to be able to close.
Did the House Intelligence Committee
announcing running?
Just a quick question. As a matter of fact, did the House Intelligence Committee see the affidavit that backs up the warrant? Because it has to do with allegedly classified information being mishandled, which that would fall under your purview, right?
It would. And Ranking Member Turner sent a letter to Ray asking him to immediately brief us, which to my knowledge, he hasn't. I've seen no such document. It's possible others have since we have not been in session, but I don't think so, Hugh.
Thank you, Congressman Gallagher. Peyote powered Packers, P cubed. Be well, Congressman. Coming right back, America. Stay tuned. Welcome back, America. It's Hugh Hewitt. Brian Westbury is with me. Normally, I talk macroeconomic issues. Today, I'm going to talk with Brian, who is the chief economist at First Trust Portfolio, about a microeconomic issue, the cost of audits, because 87,000 new IRS agents is not a wonderful opportunity to increase federal revenues. It's actually a nightmare for a country teetering on or in recession. Brian, do you agree with me on that? 87,000 new IRS agents. What does that do to the economy?
Oh, it is a complete and utter waste of resources complying with government rules and regulations. You know, for years, people like Jack Kemp and Dick Armey, God rest their souls, and Ronald Reagan and many, many other politicians have talked about a flat tax where, you know, you could literally fill out your taxes on a postcard. And what we have done is gone the complete opposite way. You know, every year we hear these stories where even the New York Times, Washington Post, they go interview CPAs and they do certain people's taxes, and then they turn them in, and they always have errors. And the reason they have errors is because the system is so complicated. And so when you put auditors in a system that nobody, even the professionals, can get right every single time, it's a recipe for disaster, and it will completely suck up resources that have nothing to do with the production of goods and services and making anyone's life better.
Now, Brian, the IRS agents, the Democrats said that IRS agents testify that for every dollar spent on IRS enforcement, they bring in $10 in revenue. I don't know if that's true, but that's beside the point. If the cost of the audit to the country and the economy is greater than the $10 of revenue they bring in, that's the real question, is what does it do to the economy?
Yeah, first of all, I don't believe that number at all. Second of all, it eats up resources that could be used for something else. You know, we keep hearing all the time about how, you know, it's for the kids, it's for the poor. Well, here are resources that are being utilized. We could design a taxation system that is much more efficient, much less costly, and could lead to a reduction in the number of IRS agents. Instead, we make it more complicated, and we need more oversight and more regulation, and we just suck up people's time. You know, in the end, people will pay. I'll pay anybody. I'm not against society or paying taxes. People will pay up to the amount that they feel that they get back. Like, what does our government give us? And how much are we willing to pay? And the more costly we make it through either regulation, audits, the actual tax levels, the more costly we make it to be a member of society, the fewer people will truly want to be a member of society.
And this, I got to ask you, Brian, given the advances in technology, given that the IRS gets billions of dollars, shouldn't they have automated a lot of it? Because it just seems to me that AI, if Google can figure out which ads to send me, if Facebook or someone can hear me because I've signed a terms of consent, 5% of apps allow the app operator to actually turn on your phone and listen. That's why you get targeted ads. You mentioned a mortuary in a room full of people, and everyone will find out where they're going to get buried because the app in the room gets. If they can do that, why can't the IRS do that with fewer people?
Yeah, my simple answer is they don't want to. They'd rather harass people. I mean, I hate to sound like that, but the point I'm getting to here is we could design a tax system. It's already been designed. It's been floated. I mean, I've written bills when I worked in Congress to put in a flat tax. It's the simplest thing in the world. You could do your taxes on a postcard. If we really wanted to do it, we could change it to a national sales tax and get rid of the income tax completely. And then you only pay taxes when you spend. And all of this would be really, really simple. I don't want the IRS listening to me. I don't want the IRS, you know, coming after me and saying, hey, you sent $700 to your kid. What was that for? And I'm like, well, they're in college. Like, no, it's a taxable event. And I'm like, no, it's not. I'm saying, you know, you have to fight. We're going to have to fight everything. And anyway, all that does from an economic perspective is suck up resources into regulation, if you will, into the bureaucracy. And when somebody who mows your lawn and puts chemicals down has to fill out 22 pieces of paper in order to carry that chemical around in their truck, It's a waste of resources.
And oh, my goodness. And that's what, by the way, Liz Truss is promising to fix that in Great Britain. I think whoever runs for president in 2024 has got to make a keynote that the IRS expansion has to be rolled back. And indeed, everyone running right now has to do that like Lindsey Graham did yesterday. Brian Westbury at Westbury, W-E-S-B-U-R-Y on Twitter. First Trust Portfolio in Chicago. Thank you, my friend. I'll be right back. Hour 3 of the Wednesday edition of the Hugh Hewitt Show coming up. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Why am I playing Let It Whip by the Daz Band? Because Senator Tim Scott likes to sing it. Good morning, Senator Scott.
Whip it right. Whip it right. I love it, Hugh. How are you?
I am great. That is in the book, America, A Redemption Story, your brand new bestseller. Tell people why you like to sing Let It Whip.
You know, it's one of those motivating songs when you were in high school. You're looking for something that gets you pumped up for the next game or the next opportunity or asking that beautiful girl out for a date. You got to get your head right. And one of the ways I do that, Hugh, is through whip it, whip it.
I know. Has so anyone else used that bump yet? I think that's the best bump when you're doing the book tour. Anyone else use that yet?
Hugh, I knew you were smarter than almost everyone else, and now I know why. And your instincts are strong as well.
Well, you read the books. That's what we do. Hey, let me read to you the two most important excerpts from America, A Redemption Story. I've got lots to talk to you about, but I want to make sure I get this on the record. Page 74, I am a U.S. senator for this one reason. It is the thing that drives me every single day. I am doing my all-out best to make the kinds of opportunities that were presented to me more readily available to every American, no matter their zip code. While I believe we live in a nation that's already brimming with opportunity, I also believe one of the primary jobs of the federal government is to make sure these kinds of opportunities exist for everyone. And then 80 pages later, page 153, in italics, before I die, I pray, please let my life positively influence the lives of 1 billion people. That's a big ask, Senator Scott.
We live in the most amazing country on earth. We should have amazing asks. We have been blessed with too much. Too often to ask for too little. We should never allow our objectives and our primary goals to be small. This nation and the people that came before us paid a very high price for us to have the American dream in the way and the shape that it's in today. I know that there's some bad news, and I blame a lot of that on the Biden administration, but I will tell you what, there's also really good news. Good people of good intent who don't look like me and some who do all came together to help me form my opinion that this country is the greatest country on earth. And if you apply yourself, it's not free. You got to work for it. If you apply yourself, almost anything is possible. And I wish we would have that conversation on every major media outlet. And I refuse to believe that this is the most divisive, polarized, racially toxic time in America. I'm not sure if they missed the Civil War or the Jim Crow South or the 1960s, but Hugh, we are in good shape comparatively speaking to almost any other nation on earth.
Yeah, Senator, America, A Redemption Story is a enormous booster shot of optimism. I finished it. I turned to my son who's vacationing with me and his brought his newborn and his wife up to the Northern Studio in Maine. And I put it down and I said to him, Tim Scott's going to be on the ticket in 2024. I don't know if he's going to be on the top of it or if he's going to be running for vice president, but he's going to be. So let me be the first to ask, would you be willing to be vice president on somebody's ticket?
Yeah, one of the things I've learned in my high school days of playing football and my 1 year playing college football is only focus on one game at a time. And the people of South Carolina have elected me to serve them in the United States Senate, and I'm up for re-election. So the only objective I have today is to make sure that they, my bosses, know how much I appreciate the job I have. I'm going to continue to do it to the best of my ability.
All right. Well, I'll come back after the election and ask you that. But I was the first one to ask you. Now, Senator Scott, you might be running for president. I don't know. Would you run for president if President Trump was running?
Oh, my gosh. As I just said, I'm not thinking about running for president at all at this point.
Well, there's a whole chapter in here about Tim Scott for president. Of course, I read it, so I know what the joke is. But
exactly.
There is a chapter in the book called Tim Scott for president.
There is indeed. I tell you what, as long as you can go back in the future, you'll really enjoy that conversation about me running for president. of Stahl High School's student government. It was one of the things that I loved about that chapter was just a tease, because ultimately people do ask the question. But think about it this way, Heath. We live in the most remarkable country, where a kid growing up in poverty, single-parent household in the Deep South, is now the first African-American to be ever elected to both the United States House and the Senate. God has been good to me, and this country has been amazing. I'm going to fight to make sure that we are the greatest country on earth and the city on the hill.
You know, Senator Scott, I want to make sure people know that you change lives and that you are very grateful to people. This is a book brimming with gratitude, and I appreciate that. I think it's one of the most essential qualities to a happy life is to be grateful to people. You call out so many people, whether it's Henry McMaster or Joe McKeon, but I want to talk about your orthodontist, because honest to goodness, I think that story may motivate people today. So tell people about that.
Well, here in my book, America Redemption Story, I tell the story about Dr. Monty S. Harrington, an orthodontist, an amazing person who I am so thankful that our paths crossed. I walked about a mile and a half to his office. And as a 19-year-old kid, I walked into his office with no money, not a lot of hope, but just a glimmer that maybe someone would take mercy on me. And Dr. Harrington did. I had two front teeth, Hugh, that didn't like each other. One was going left and one was going right. And buck teeth in high school gives you a nickname you don't really like.
Right.
And as a sophomore in college, I finally got up the nerve, walked to his office, and he said, "Wow, I think I can help you." I think he was just in shock, by the way, Hugh. And Dr. Harrington literally gave me braces. And then he said, such an important thing, he said, "How much can you afford? This is not free. But whatever you commit to, young man, you better do." I said, "I can afford $40 a month." And he said, "Good enough." I never missed a payment because this man gave me a chance to change my life. And had it not been for Dr. Harrington, I guarantee you I would not be talking to you today.
You know, I think that is so inspiring. And people got to ask. And there's nothing wrong. Only pride stops people from asking for what they need. And I just love that story. I also love the story that Allstate gave you a second chance when most people don't get one because you asked for it.
Yes. I tell you what, Hugh, as a guy who took a proficiency test, and I love when they say, "You can't fail this test." And then you come through the test and they said, "You must have failed this test."
Yeah.
You don't have the opportunity to start your own franchise. And they say that you never get a second chance. And that's why the redemption part of the book is so important. They actually gave me a second chance to retake that proficiency test, and then I scored really well, opened my own agency, became the new agency of the year, and a few years later, the agency owner of the year. Because once again, if you keep working hard and you keep asking, the most unbelievable things happen.
You know, Senator, I think January 6th committee was a bad idea and illegitimate from the start. But your book has a chapter on January 6th, which begins by your talking to Eugene Goodman, the Capitol Police officer, about socks. But it ends up in the Hart Building after a run through the tunnels of the Capitol and a group of senators yelling at each other when you speak up and ask the chaplain to pray. Would you tell people about that? Because I think it's really the most arresting thing I've read about January 6th.
Yeah, so many people want to place blame on what happened on January 6th on somebody other than the people who came into the building. And the only people that we should hold accountable for their actions are the people who actually do what they do. As we were escaping through the train, through the Hart Building, we got into this room and the temperature was high and the thinking was low. And there was tons of animosity pointing at each other and senators were cussing and yelling at each other. It was a very chaotic scene. And for some reason, this peace hit me, and I just felt I needed to go up there and say something. And I told people to stop yelling at each other, but the most important thing I did was stop talking. I asked the chaplain to come pray. And no matter what faith you are, after Chaplain Black prayed, the temperature went down and the thinking went up. It was one of the most incredible 180-degree turns I had seen in minutes. It's one of the reasons why I think that day turned out to be as eventful as it was in the end, even though it's hard to deny the misery of the beginning.
Oh, my gosh. It was a horrible day. And I don't think anyone will ever think otherwise. I also have to thank you. It's not in the book, but I want to talk about your buddy, Jim Lankford. You and Jim changed the Fetching Mrs. Hewitt and my trajectory of how we think about race when you both said, invite someone of a different race to your house for dinner. That wasn't new to us, but we hadn't done it in a while. So I called up Dr. and Dr. Whitlock, who at the time were in Orange County. They're now in Maryland. He runs the largest AME church in the United States. They came over for dinner. We had a great dinner. How is that initiative going, Senator?
He was going really well for me. I have been working on that initiative for several years, and I will say that every Thanksgiving, every Christmas, and most major holidays, I have a group of friends that join me for the holidays, white guys, Filipinos, Koreans, obviously African-Americans as well. We all get together, and we just celebrate holidays together. And sometimes we don't even believe the same, but we do love the same. We believe in unconditional acceptance of each other. And we have strong disagreements, but we don't let the disagreement stop us from celebrating whatever the holiday is. And one of the things, Hugh, I talk about in my book, America Redemption Story, is the power of people coming together in my life. My mentor was a white guy who ran a Chick-fil-A. Dr. Harrington was a white guy who was my orthodontist. I only say the color of their skin because today, if you're watching too many of the news stations, you would think that there are oppressors and racists of one color and victims and the inferior on the other side. And that's just patently false. And so I go out of my way in America Redemption Story to tell the truth on both sides of the ledger. I've had amazing experiences. I've had some challenges as well. But we should not forget the amazing experiences. And it's one of the reasons why James Lankford, the senator from Oklahoma, and I started the program Solution Sundays. We wanted people to experience life as we have. And thank you, Hugh, for doing that with Dr. Whitlock.
Well, he and his wife are amazing, and we had a wonderful time. Now, before we go to break, Senator Scott, I want to talk about specifically what you have to say about education in this book. On page 47, you write about many schools in our poorest areas are simply failing. In the United States, if you have the means, you send your child to a private school. If you are middle class, you buy a house in a neighborhood with good schools. But if you don't have either resources or means, you are stuck. Your children are relegated to whatever exists in your neighborhood, and it's rarely good. I think education is going to matter enormously in your race in South Carolina, in the Republican races in New Hampshire, next door for Herschel Walker, for J.D. Vance, for Dr. Oz, for Tiffany Smiley, for Adam Laxalt, for Joe O'Day. Do you think this is the key issue? There are others, crime, inflation, the border, now the raid on President Trump. But I think education is going to drive a lot of moms to vote for Republicans.
I could not have said it better. I always say that a good education in America is the closest thing to magic. And in the poor zip codes, that is elusive at best. And when you think about Nevada or New Hampshire, Wisconsin, Ohio, Pennsylvania, South Carolina, Georgia, North Carolina, Ted Budd's race. Being the party of parents is who we are as Republicans.
Oh, that's well put.
We shout from the mountaintop that we are going to make sure that parents can see the curriculum of their kids. We're going to make sure that parents have access to their schools. We should be championing the cause of parents because that is how you champion the cause of children.
Boy, being the party of parents. If I were Blake Masters in Arizona, which has just passed the most radical school choice ever in the United States, it's a backpack bill. The funding follows the student, whether they go to public school or private school, whether they go to a secular private or a secular public charter school. If they go to a Christian school, the funding follows the student. Blake Masters is running against Mark Kelly. I know you get along with everyone, Senator, but Blake Masters should campaign on that, shouldn't he?
Hugh, I agree totally. Let me say this, and you being the amazing man that you are, a smart guy, and I don't say that just to be nice. I say that to be sincere. Can you imagine this thing called a Pell Grant, which, of course, is a subsidy that goes to private schools or religious schools for college students? The money literally follows the student. Why in the world is this a foreign concept from K-12? If you don't have a quality K-12 education, you're ineligible for the Pell Grant because you don't go to college.
Yeah.
So I think
crazy.
Blake would embrace it. Blake should embrace it. We should, as a party, embrace it. And frankly, as a kid who went to four different elementary schools by the fourth grade, my mother wishes that she had something like a Pell Grant for K through 12. Something that actually makes sense.
I want to talk about your mom now. First time I met you, very first time, California Club, our friend John Barger put it together. And yes. Back in the days before I joined the Washington Post and I could write checks to candidates, I gladly wrote you one. I can't do that anymore. But John Barger put it together and we were having, and you told us about your mom and how you ranked third out of three boys. And you call her every day. And you also proudly co-chair the Select Committee on Seniors because of her and because of what it does. Tell people about her and why you do that.
You know, Hugh, growing up in a single-parent household, mired in poverty, my mother was always the hero of the story, and she still is today. She worked 16 hours a day, 3 days a week, 8 hours a day, 2 days a week as a nurse's aide, just changed bedpans and enrolled patients. But she taught me very early on that there's dignity in all work. If you can, you should. Do not expect a handout. Don't ask for one. Go get it yourself. My mother was a tough cookie, but she was always an optimist. She would tell me, if you shoot for the moon, even if you miss, you'll be among the stars. And unfortunately, I did not always pay attention to her advice. So I did not do very well my freshman year in high school. And at the end of the year, she introduced me to a new form of encouragement. I call it the psychology of the switch, which is a Southern term. A switch is a Southern apparatus of encouragement. It is oftentimes applied between your ankle and your belt line. So it was a good form of encouragement for a very important year in my life.
You know, I think you and your mom and your brothers are really an American inspiration story. But that led you to want to be the Senate Special Committee on Aging. Quote, this is a position I covet. There are currently 5.7 million people living in the United States with Alzheimer's. This number is expected to triple by 2050. This is on page 79. Everyone listening to this out in the audience, there are millions more who are impacted by Alzheimer's. My father-in-law died of it. It is a very devastating disease. Senator Scott, nobody knows what the Senate is doing on this. What is the Senate doing on this?
We've had a lot of hearings in the minority to bring some attention to it. I should say I had a lot of conversations, not hearings. My friends on the other side have not had a hearing about this, and I think that's tragic. One of the things that we've done over the years when Susan Collins led the committee, we had Alzheimer's organizations coming in to talk about the tragic experiences. I will say that one of the reasons why I'm also proud to be the leading Republican on the Aging Committee is because my grandmother, who passed away at age 77, April 29, 2001, died from Alzheimer's and related issues. And for the last 4 or 5 years, she just seemed trapped in her own body. And it was one of the most devastating experiences one can go through, and the pain and misery of watching someone that you love incredibly die slowly and just wilt away. It's heart wrenching. The more we focus on this awful disease, the more amazing the results will be. I hope that we kickstart a brand new conversation with the goal of eliminating or at least finding treatments for Alzheimer's. That should be one of the priorities from a healthcare perspective of this country.
Now, Senator, America, a redemption story. You've obviously been trained by Frank Luntz and others to say the title of the book, America, a Redemption Story, seven times. And I tell all my authors, if you're going to sell a book, tell this title seven times. This is an absolute methamphetamine steroid of optimism. But I got to ask you, against the backdrop of a Senate bill that expanded the IRS. And by the way, lots of nice people work for the IRS. I've known them forever. I've never had a problem with the IRS. 87,000 new agents. You voted against it on Sunday, but the Senate passed 87,000 new agents. And each one of them can do to any American taxpayer what the FBI did to Donald Trump on Monday night. Am I right Monday afternoon? Am I right about that?
Absolutely. One of the things that we should all be concerned about is the unprecedented and the shocking raid that occurred in Mar-a-Lago. Can you imagine the average person watching that, Republican or Democrat, saying, what in the world? If they can do that to him, what can they do to me? That's one of the backdrops. But also empowering the IRS, not only with a 600% increase in their budget, but also with 87,000 new employees to search through and find what they would consider tax cheats. But by the way, they're not looking at millionaires and billionaires. According to the Congressional Budget Office, 90% of the revenue generated from this new tax search comes from middle-income Americans, low-income Americans who can't afford an attorney to defend them. This is ridiculous, Hugh. I am so incensed about that one part of the bill, not to mention the tax increases on businesses. And you know, Hugh, that's a pass-through to the employees, to the consumers, and to the shareholders. The impact that this bill will have, the Inflation Reduction Act, according to CBO, it doesn't decrease inflation literally at all.
At all. I just hope everyone starts calling it the IRS Expansion Act, which is what it truly is. Senator, like before we run out of time, I would be remiss if I didn't talk to you about Tim Scott for president. And this Chapter 5 is about your high school race. I want people not to fall for the MacGuffin here. And I take away from it one thing. Don't begin a campaign with a poem. Right, Senator?
Listen, I ran for governor in Boise State with a poem. If you think you can, if you think you're beaten, you are. If you think you try not, you don't. If you'd like to win but think you can't, it's almost as if you won't. Let me tell you what. Anyone who does that in the middle of a campaign will lose. I got beat like a drum. It was a wonderful lesson of what not to do while campaigning.
And people should read this book who are running for office. Mostly, though, be optimistic. I want to wrap up, Senator, by asking you very, very seriously about race, because I often talk to people. Right now, Salem has a new movie out called Uncle Tom 2 by Larry Elder. Uncle Tom 1 was very, very important. It's all over at salemnow.com. You write a chapter, and Herschel Walker is running in an adjoining state. I used to work for MSNBC. I'm very careful not to criticize by name those I worked with or guests that graced my very low-rated show. But I neither know the host nor the guest who called Herschel Walker the Republicans' favorite form of Negro. And Herschel Walker replied with a beautiful ad of Christian love towards that individual who used hate speech against him. But you write in this book, you were finishing it when you were stopped for the fifth time driving to the Capitol. I can't put myself in your shoes. You explain why. But what do you think about race in America and people doing that to Herschel Walker and probably doing it to you?
Oh, my goodness. Hugh, don't read my social media platforms, because you'll be depressed when you get finished with it. There's no doubt that every person I know typically experiences some form of discrimination. But here's what I know, that the strongest forms of discrimination that I experience today come from liberal elites who want to make a caricature of me and keep me in my place. What they are afraid of is any person, especially minorities, who think for themselves and come to conclusions that are inconsistent with the centralized approach that someone can live your life better than you can. Someone can decide better than you can. And in my book, I talk about the good people on all sides of the racial issue that we can get along. Truth is, as I wrap this up, that I believe that America is better because we are diverse, but the bigotry from the left, I think, are headwinds for racial progress.
Well, America, a Redemption Story is a harpoon in that bias, and I congratulate you on America, a Redemption Story. You brought it out in a week where the headlines are forcing people to talk to you about Donald Trump all the time. I hope they read the book, Senator. I hope it's going well. I hope the sales are taking off. It is really a joyful experience. Congratulations on it. Come back and talk to me again soon.
Thanks so much, Hugh. Thanks for having us.
Be well, Senator. Take care and good luck on the book tour.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn. deliver the truth, whatever the cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.